Hello, everybody. Welcome to Progress in Congress, where we discuss best of and worst of genre book lists that are both original and taken from the internet. Thank you, internet. We offer commentary, ask each other questions, and perhaps at the end offer read-alikes and documentaries slash movies that are relevant to the books we'll be discussing. But before all that, we will have our Outrageous News of the Week segment.
We have to introduce ourselves.
I guess that's a part we have to do.
Yeah.
My name is Jeff.
My name's Zicky.
Thank you for ruining my name, Channing Tatum. It's never going to be the same again. Anyway, segment, Outrageous News of the Week. We pose each other bizarre headlines, and the other has to guess if it's real or satire. So I'll go first.
You'll go first? Okay.
South Korea mayor dumps ton of trash on beach for cleanup day, and city's alcoholism rebranded as culture.
Oh my gosh. Wait, what's the city? Does it say what the city is?
It's fake. No? City's alcoholism rebranded as culture.
Which one's fake? which one's real? Okay, I think the alcohol one is a lie.
Yeah, you got it.
I'm right? Yes.
Yeah. Wouldn't doubt it, though.
Yes. That would actually be funny if it was, if that actually happened in real life. That'd be like a college town, though.
That's what they would do in the near future.
In the near future, yeah. Okay, so mine is, Labradoodle creator says it's his life's regrets, and Botox criticized for new ad campaign targeting Millie Bobby Brown.
Yeah, that's tough. I'm gonna go with the Botox.
Botox one is
false.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah. To our main program.
To the main program.
For this episode, we are discussing worst of the killer slash murderer genre books.
Specifically serial killers.
There we go.
True crime is a very large genre, which you said you don't read a whole lot about.
No.
No? Okay.
Sadly not.
So I picked a serial killer specifically. So there are a lot of other books that I would rate higher, but when there's only one killing, it's not exactly a serial killer.
Yep.
And do you know what a serial killer is?
He goes on sprees, right?
No. Those are spree killers. Like, that would be saying that, like, school shooters would be serial killers since they killed a bunch of people, right?
Okay, yeah, that's not right. Let me try again. There's a pattern?
Yes, that's true.
And he's a psychopath.
Most of the time, yeah.
Right,
yeah, most of it. Yeah, it's mostly somebody who has a pattern. There is a science word for it, but I can't pronounce it, but there's a science word for it. There's a sort of pattern they do, the way they kill, the way they hunt, and they usually have a cooling down period. So they might kill somebody for, I don't know, maybe they'll do one person a month or every 2 months, but they'll be able to calm down. Whereas, like, spree killers, they will just go and kill people until they get caught. So that's the difference.
More than no.
In a nutshell. So, the fifth one I'm going to talk about, and you can just ask me questions, I guess, if you want.
Yeah, let's do this.
So, the fifth one I picked, which is the fifth worst one that I've read, and it was called The Want Ad Killer by Anne Rule. Anne Rule is a really prolific true crime writer. She's going to be mentioned in the next episode because she had another book that made the top five. Mm. But this one is about Harvey Louis Karganen. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. He was born in May 18, 1927. He is still alive, apparently, and he's an American serial killer currently serving a life sentence at the Minnesota Correctional Facility for the murders of two confirmed women. There is belief that he killed more, but there's only two that is confirmed. He has been previously convicted for a 1949 rape and murder he committed while stationed in the U.S. Army in, oh, I can't pronounce this either, Anchorage, Alaska. Huh. And he was actually paroled for that crime in 1960, but, you know, when the murders happened, he's back in jail.
Yeah.
So I picked this book for one of the bad ones because the writing was pretty bad in comparison to her other books.
Sure.
It was short. I mean, not that short. It was, almost 300 pages or 200, but that's her shortest book she's ever written.
Short to you?
Well, for true crime, yeah. Yeah. The serial killer itself is kind of boring, which sounds kind of ridiculous for me saying that, but if you've read a lot of serial killer books, sometimes some of them are just plain and boring.
I think you're just desensitized now.
Probably. That's what my mom says. Yeah. Jeez. Yeah.
It happens. It's okay.
I give it like 2 stars out of 5. I probably would have given it 1 star out of 5 just because it's Anne Rule. Like, I don't know. She's written so much other good stuff. It's just unfortunate. Yeah. I also got a comment from somebody on Goodreads, which is from Claire. And she said, I put this on my couldn't finish list, which is pretty bad because I read about 2/3 of it and I just couldn't complete it. The title is so deceiving and altogether just didn't captivate me at all.
I wonder what kind of books she did like.
Yeah, that's a good question, actually.
How does her writing in this book compare to her perhaps better ones, in your opinion?
It's not as detailed.
Interesting.
Usually she researches, like, I'm sure she obviously researched for this one, but not as well as her other ones.
Sure.
For true crime, you kind of want to know the whole story of what happened. And for this one, it kind of reminded me of, like, a really long news article. Like, a really long one, but...
Yeah.
You know, so... That's what I put on my top, on my fifth one. For number 4 is The Night Stalker by Clifford L. Leindecker. Have you ever heard of The Night Stalker?
No. Tell me more.
Okay, so his name is Ricardo, he's dead now, Richard Munoz Ramirez. I am not Spanish, I cannot speak this.
Exotic.
He was born February 29th, 1960 in El Paso, Texas. He's a convicted Mexican-American serial killer. At the time, he was awaiting execution on California's death row at San Quentin State Prison. I believe he died from cancer before that, so he never got the proper justice he deserved. Prior to the capture, he was dubbed the Night Stalker by the news media as he terrorized California. So why do you think he was given the name Night Stalker?
He probably did some crazy things at night, as in harming people by ending their lives.
Yes, exactly. He would break into houses and apartments in the middle of the night and would scare people when they were safest at home in bed. For his records of crimes, 13 counts of murder for sure, 5 counts of attempted murder, 11 counts of sexual assault, and 14 years of burglary. His criminal penalty was 19 death sentences.
Ooh.
Yeah. He was also a Satanist. I don't know if you're familiar with Satanism.
Yeah.
Not saying all Satanists are, but yeah. He was, and his famous like photo is holding up a palm and he's got the Satanist symbol on his hand.
Interesting.
He also had a lot of fangirls at the time.
Okay.
Because so he was tall, like, and dark and handsome.
Sounds like the whole Ted Bundy thing.
Yeah, it totally is in that way. But so he died of lymphoma cancer or something, the kind of cancer you get in your bloods, I think.
Ooh, yeah, that doesn't sound too fun. So, you mentioned Satanists. Something that I read not too long ago. They actually don't necessarily believe in Satan.
No,
it's
they
more
don't.
More the principles of autonomy. There's that and showing respect to one another. I think one of their commandments, actually, that I agree with is not offering advice unless it has been asked of you.
And oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
I think unsolicited criticism or anything like that, I don't know. It could bother people. You just got to be careful with that.
It's certain people like this who kind of ruin the Satanism brand.
Yeah.
They get twisted and they kind of like the symbolism all, but Satanism is actually kind of a pretty peaceful religion from what I've read. Of course, my mom saw that I was reading the Satanic Bible and she flipped out.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So I don't know where that book went. It's probably it got thrown out. Ooh. But yeah.
It's a shame.
So this book was like, okay, but there are better ones. This book made number 4 because it was poorly researched. Like, the dates were off, spelling wasn't that great, grammar was off. And the commentary in Goodreads actually mentioned that this person got Ted Bundy's execution date right, which was, I guess, Ted Bundy's was mentioned in the book or something, or maybe related to it. But her comment was, Having already read Philip Carlo's book on the Night Stalker case, I was keen to read this. Unfortunately, I found it to be poorly researched and littered with inaccuracies. Not even Ted Bundy's execution date was right. Jenny from Goodreads.
Thank you, Jenny. We appreciate that review.
So it was like the story, like, not that it's it's a good story, because it's not. There's murder and stuff. But it's interesting, but the writing itself was kind of, like, lazy.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Have you ever read stuff that's lazy?
Yeah. Yeah, you just don't want to read it.
Yeah.
Just on to the next one. So try harder next time.
Clifford L. Leindecker.
Oh.
That's who he's by.
Get good or something.
Pretty sure he's written other stuff, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I take it back.
Take it back.
I'm sure you'll have more money than I'll ever have.
Yeah, right?
Authors tend to. Anyway, number three.
Number three is... This one I have the most to talk about. So the book is called The BTK Killer by John Douglas. Now, John Douglas is full of himself.
Oh.
He is full of himself, but we'll get onto that later. I'm just going to give a bit about who the BTK Killer was. So the actual dude's name is Dennis Lynn Rader, born March 9th, 1945. He's still alive. He's an American serial killer who murdered 10 people in Sedgwick County and in around Wichita, Kansas. Between 1974 and 1991, he was known as the BTK Killer or the BTK Strangler, which stands for Bind, Torture, and Kill.
Oh, what?
Yeah. And describes his modus operandi. Oh, I can't pronounce it right, but that's the scientific term I was talking to about. That means like a pattern, a sort of like a routine that they do.
That's like Latin.
Yeah, it is Latin or something. Cool. Anyways, he also sent boastful letters describing the details of the killings to the police and to the local news outlets during the period of time in which the murders took place. After a long hiatus in the 1990s, he resumed sending letters in 2004, leading to his 2005 arrest and eventual conviction.
Someone got cocky.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's usually how a lot of the serial killers get caught, is they end up being really full of themselves.
Humble yourself, man. Or don't kill people.
Or just don't kill people. Yeah, so even known to break into houses, like tie up everybody, and would torture them.
Yikes.
Rather in front of each other. I don't remember exactly the order, but I think he would kill the kids in front of the parents. I believe. He had this whole plan out.
Someone.
And he, of course, had kids himself at the time and had a wife. So there was that.
This man was hurt or something.
And he's probably the plainest looking dude I've seen in my life.
Oh.
Like, he's just got a mustache and he's just straight-faced or whatever.
Hey, mustaches are cool. Take it back.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Jeff has a mustache, obviously.
For the record.
So this one I really couldn't stand because... Well, John Douglas is, like, a really prolific profiler. Do you know what a profiler is?
Profiler is someone who kind of categorizes killers by patterns?
Yeah, basically. He was kind of the person who put together the first FBI squad in that area. So he's written quite a few books, but he's always had a co-writer with him. This is a book... that has a different co-writer. I don't know if I want to blame it on the co-writer or not, but this one was edited terribly.
Because... Under the bus you go.
Yeah, sorry, dude. I didn't even put him down. I just put it down as John Douglas. Oh. So, but you can find him online. Just BTK Killer by John Douglas. But this John Douglas guy, he is just full of himself.
Mm.
Like, basically he talked about how this case affected his personal life, which I guess is fine because... This would be a really, I can't imagine having a job like that dealing with serial killers.
Yep.
But it got to the point where, like, I really don't care how your job is affecting your sex with your wife. Like, it got to that point.
Jeez.
And it just got really annoying. It also got to the point where he just felt like only he could solve it, and he had been there all the time, and he was going back to his previous cases, and, like, dude, I really don't care. I just want to hear about this case.
So it sounds like it kind of ended up reading like a diary.
Exactly, yeah, it could have been, like, he should have called it a memoir.
Yeah.
But
would it have been...
Would have been okay. If I
was go into it knowing that, yes, this is going to be, like, him getting his thoughts out.
Yeah. But it was, like, a memoir, and maybe some people like true crimes as memoirs from police. I'm not one of those people. I don't really care about the police's opinions. Well, I do, but I don't want to hear about a detective's life story.
You are cold.
I am cold, yes. I'm sorry.
Do you think it was a nature thing? Like, his parents were screwed up, or nurture, so, like, his environment?
I think it's never one or the other. It's always a combination.
Yeah?
For sure. Because for some of them, obviously, well, the majority of them, they were abused as children. Granted, a lot of people get abused as children. Not all of them end up being serial killers.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's definitely a combination. It's definitely a genetic component to some degree. But then that also... explains why some psychopaths, they don't, not all psychopaths kill people. They're just usually the CEOs of companies, generally. You're quite successful if you're a psychopath, because you don't let emotions get in your way.
For sure. You're, like, strictly logic.
Yeah. What has to be done? Not gonna let this razzle me.
Yeah, selfish, you lack empathy, don't really care if you need to stomp on people to get ahead, so it makes sense.
He has written, John Nicholas has written a lot of other books, but he had, I think it was Mark Olson, he had a different co-writer, and there was still a bit of ego in his other books, but it wasn't as severe as it was in this one. Mm. And Deborah from Goodreads agrees with me on this one, which I found. She said, "The information is fascinating, but the author is so self-congratulatory and egotistical that it's hard to swallow without gagging. Yes, Mr. Douglas, we know you started the profiling unit at Quantico, Virginia. That's where the FBI is, in case nobody knows. And yes, you were an FBI agent from 1970. And yes, you retired from the FBI in 1995. And now you do pro bono work for local law enforcement. Yes, you are very clever. But for heaven's sake, why do you assume your readers are so stupid we won't absorb anything unless it's bludgeoned repeatedly into our skulls?"
Ooh.
Deborah, yeah. From Goodreads. I love you, Deborah.
That is quite sternly worded. But I mean, I guess he's worked enough to get to that point where he can afford to be egotistical, but it comes off as pretentious, eh?
Yeah. And yeah. It sucks because everybody really loves him from what I've read. Anybody in true crime book clubs or anybody from the serial killers subreddit, they all praise this John Douglas guy. And I never really say anything because I know I'll get backlash for it. It's like, he's not that great of a writer.
That's when you go to the unpopular opinion subreddit.
That's a thing?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a sure thing. What are the unpopular opinions? Are they just, like, political stuff?
They're honestly mostly popular opinion. So it's counterintuitive. It's kind of like an echo chamber, if you will.
Oh, okay.
But visit it. Check it out. Number two?
Number two is The Cannibal by Mel Hymer. Yum, if you pronounce that right. Yum, yum, yum. So what do you think this is about?
Someone who has an appetite for human flesh.
True.
Yeah.
So this guy is Albert Hamilton Fish. He's way back in the day. He was born in 1870, so this is like an old case. But he's very familiar because he was very graphic and he wrote a letter about it, which Ooh. We'll get into a bit later.
Okay.
So Albert Fish was, as I said, born May 1970 to January 16, 1936, during the Great Depression. Huh. So he was an American sadomasochistic serial killer and cannibal, and he was known as the Gray Man, the Werewolf of Wisteria, and possibly the Brooklyn Vampire. Hmm. He boasted that he had killed children in every state, I'm putting that in quotes, putting the figure at around 100, although it is not clear whether he was talking about molestation or cannibalism, less still as whether it was true or not. He was a suspect of at least 5 killings in his lifetime. Fish confessed to 3 murders, and the police were able to trace to a known homicide and confessed to stabbing at least 2 other people. He was put on trial for the kidnapping murder of Grace Spud and was convicted and executed via electric chair. So this...
Heavy.
Sorry, what'd
That's
you say?
Heavy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's heavy. The letter's even heavier. I actually really like this case. Like, the book was good, but it was too short. Like, way too short. And when it's a murder like this, I mean, maybe I like gore, I'm not sure, I'm desensitized, as you said, but you could go into so much, like, detail on the murders, but this book just didn't. Mm. It kind of glossed over the cases.
So, what if a book was short, but really went into those parts, would you be down for it?
Yeah.
Or do you just like the longer?
No, I like some of the short ones, but like this one, I don't know, it just...
It's missing the juicy parts?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Like, it kind of read almost like, almost a book report.
Yeah,
you know, when
that's
it's
boring.
Well, yeah, I mean, it gets the facts down, but it's just not that interesting.
Hmm.
I've never read anything by this author, so maybe he's written longer things, I'm not sure, but the funny part was I found this book in the kids section at my work. I work at a thrift store. It was like, maybe, I don't even know how do I say, it's like, how much is this, an inch? Maybe
Centimeter.
An inch, it was very thin and very small. It looked like those little chapter books that you would get when you were a kid.
Oh, okay.
So, because I just saw Cannibal when I had my head, I was like, what is that? But yeah, it was super short. He also stuck needles in his body, like, up his rectum, I think. So he was a very confused guy. And,
That's one way to put it.
Yeah. I wrote down his, proof or confession letter. He wrote this letter, well, he was convicted for the murder of Grace Budd, which was just a girl. She was maybe, like, 10 or 12, something like that. He wrote a letter and sent it to her mom. as you can imagine, that would be like.
Yep.
So where we get... That's oh, terrible. It starts off as the first thing. So I'm going to read this because I can swear. So,
let's go.
Are you ready?
We'll do it.
Okay. My dear Mrs. Budd, in 1894, a friend of mine shipped as a deckhand on the steamer Tamako Captain John Davis. They sailed from San Francisco to Hong Kong, China. On arriving there, he and two others went ashore and got drunk. When they returned, the bus was gone. At the time, there was a famine in China. Meat of any kind was from $1 to $3 a pound. So great was the suffering among the poor, the very poor, that all children under 12 were sold to the butchers to be cut up and sold for food in order to keep others from starving. A boy or girl under 14 was not safe in the street. You could go into any shop and ask for steak, chops, or stew meat. Part of the naked body of a boy or girl would be brought out, and just what you wanted would be cut from it. A boy or girl's behind, which is the sweetest part of the body, and sold as a veal cutlet.
Wait. How does that make sense? I thought your behind is where all the fat is.
Apparently it's the sweetest part.
Is it the glutes, then, that they'd be eating?
I guess it'd be the fat. No, because you don't want... I don't know. Do you eat fat meat?
Is it the muscle? No.
You're supposed
to cut that off.
Are you?
That's terrible?
Just get to that part about which part. Yes. Anyways. John said there was so price to be acquired a taste of human flesh. On his return to NY, he stole two boys, 1-7 and 1-11, took them to his home, stripped them naked, tied them in the closet, and burned everything they had on. Several times every day and night, he spanked them, tortured them, to make their meat good and tender. First, he killed the 11-year-old boy, because he had the fattest ass, and of course, the most meat on it. Every part of his body was cooked and eaten, except the head, bones, and guts. He was roasted in the oven, all of his ass, boiled, broiled, fried, and stewed. The little boy was next, went in the same way. At the same time, I was living at 409 E100 Street, rear, right side. He told me so often how good human flesh was, I made up my mind to taste it. On Sunday, June the 3rd, 1928, I called on you at 406 W15 Street, brought you pot cheese, strawberries. We had lunch. Grace sat in my lap and kissed me. I made up my mind to eat her, on the pretense of taking her to a party. You said yes, she could go. I took her to an empty house in Westchester that I had already picked out. When we got there, I told her to remain outside. She picked wildflowers. I went upstairs and stripped all my clothes off. I knew if I did not, I would get her blood on them. When all was ready, I went to the window and called her. Then I hid in a closet until she was in the room. When she saw me all naked, she began to cry and tried to run down the stairs. I grabbed her and she said that she would tell her mama. First I stripped her naked. How did she kick, bite, and scratch? I choked her to death, and then to cut her in small pieces so I could take my meat to my rooms, cook, and eat it. How sweet and tender her little ass was roasted in the oven. It took me 9 days to eat her entire body. I did not fuck her, though I could have if I had wished. She died a virgin. So this letter was sent to this poor grieving mother, and what do you think?
That is so dark and morbid.
And morbid.
And is a testament to how... depraved.
I just don't know why he would send it to the mom.
Yeah.
Like, did he want to get caught?
That's twisted enjoyment right there.
Yeah. And he also had a lot of spelling and grammar mistakes in this, which I can see from the page I'm reading off.
That's a lot to take in. I don't think I'm having a good day now.
You're having a good day?
Yeah. Wow.
Steve from Goodreads. This was his response to the book. Not a well-written book. I had expectations of something more graphic and a closer look into his mind. The author believes that he's insane, but he is sane doing insane things. Steve from Goodreads. I don't know if he was sane, honestly. I'm not sure if he was.
Yeah. Can sane people do insane things? Is that contradictory?
That is kind of contradictory, isn't it? Or can you be sane at certain times? No, but then you'd be doing insane things. I don't know. That's a good question.
What about the other way around? Can insane people
do sane things? I guess they can. Yeah. Like normal, everyday things, I suppose.
Makes you think.
Yeah.
Number one?
Number one, or top, well, this is from my opinion, top worst serial killer book, The Most Dangerous Animal of All by Gary L. Stewart. So this is about the Zodiac Killer. Have you heard of the Zodiac Killer?
Yes.
Yes.
A lot.
Not a lot. Just the name.
It's catchy.
Nobody ever really caught him. But this guy, this author thinks his dad is the Zodiac Killer.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you a bit about the Zodiac Killer first. The Zodiac murdered victims in... Why do all these cities have names I can't pronounce? Benassau, Bellejo, Lake Berryessa, and San Francisco. San Francisco, I can say. Between December 1968 and October 1969, four men and three women between the ages of 16 and 29 were targeted, with two of the men surviving attempted murder. The Zodiac himself claimed up to 37 victims. The killer originated the name Zodiac in a series of taunting letters sent to the local Bay Area press. These letters included four cryptograms, or ciphers. Of the four cryptograms sent, only one has been definitely solved. So people to this day are still trying to solve the other three of his puzzles.
I wonder, how do people go that long without really
figuring it out?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Especially with all the forensic science and technology that's available these days. Must be meticulous in his methods.
Yeah.
It's madness.
This madness. So this book is by Gary L. Stewart. I didn't bother to look if he had other written things. I don't think I'm going to read anything by him just because I really hated the book that much.
Sorry, Gary.
Sorry to hear, Gary. So he was the author was an adopted child. So the book begins where he has to find out who his true father was and, you know, figure out whose biological father is and decides that, oh, he's like the Zodiac Killer. Mm. But basically the whole book is pretty much about the author finding identity. Because I guess when you're adopted, you don't know where you came from, and that makes sense to me and everything, but it was way too much about him. Like, John Douglas is all about him, but this time, it's him believing so much that his dad is a Zodiac Killer, with not a whole lot of proof. Well, his biological dad was a pretty shitty dad. I mean, he, like, raped girls and stuff. Mm. Looks similar to the one sketch of the Zodiac Killer. When people like see a crime, sometimes they'll have like a sketch artist,
yep,
will do a face or whatever. So his dad kind of looks similar to that. But I mean, the book should have been split into two books, one about him trying to find an identity and then him trying to figure out if it was the Zodiac Killer. And of course the book ends where there's absolutely no DNA.
Of course.
And to this day, there has been no proof that his father was the Zodiac Killer. So the book, to me, was a complete waste of my time.
Oh.
Entirely.
This is why I prefer short books, because if it is short, then you don't feel like you waste a lot of time.
Yeah.
But I guess even with the longer ones, you could kind of make fun of them.
And I remember I got this, my mom took it out for the library for me, so I didn't buy it, which is good. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, you're going to really love this, this is about... Well, she doesn't read a lot of true crime, so she had read the back, and it looks really promising, because this guy, like, I have proof that it is my father who was the Zodiac Killer, and no, you don't. It's just like a cheap cop-off, really.
Yeah. Quick money grab.
So this is a very long one. Melissa from Goodreads.
Let's hear it.
Who sums up pretty much what I had said. This book was more of the author searching for identity, hence he was adopted. The entire book is him in search of meaning and where he belongs, and somehow he comes to the conclusion that his biological father is a Zodiac Killer. There's absolutely no evidence to prove it, apart from his father looking similar to one of the few sketches of the Zodiac. Of course, the book ends up with no DNA evidence, and I felt like I wasted my time reading this. It should have been more of a memoir. Very true. The author, although I feel for his plight, wastes 40% or more of this book filling you in his background of his sad plight and his childhood, which have zero nothing to do with the murders. Yes, you do eventually get to the background of his father, but you also are given the history lesson on absolutely everybody he encountered along the way. This may be a search for parentage novel, but it bores you to death and only furthers the reader to believe the guy's desperate to make anyone his father figure, even a murderer. The evidence linked to his father to the Zodiac murders is a stretch to even consider circumstantial, and it is already a fact that more than one person's name appear backwards in the coded messages the Zodiac left. I found myself rolling my eyes about how flimsy his evidence is. This man, so desperate in his need for self-identity, annoyed and chased off people around him in his pursuit for information to the degree that he admits it, but doesn't seem to link it to maybe why the SFPD, the, I guess, San Francisco Police Department, thought he was being an overzealous crackpot. Even after the point of the book, in which he thinks he has proven his father's guilt, he drones on about himself and his discoveries, which are verbatim reiterations of previous chapters. The icing on the cake is that a woman involved in the accuracy of documents helped co-author the book. Incentive for her much? This book is a plea for attention and a horrible waste of reading time. His connections to the Zodiac are laughable. Glad it was a borrowed book. I wouldn't waste my money. Melissa from Goodreads.
Ooh.
Roasted.
Got a lot to say there.
Yeah. So, I read somewhere also that this same guy thinks that his dad as well killed the Black Dahlia. Do you know who the Black Dahlia is?
Just know the name.
Know the name, yeah. She's basically, I think it was, in maybe 1940s, 1900s anyways. They found this body severed in half, naked, on the side of the road. No one's able to prove who killed her. Wow. So this guy seems to go after all these famous unsolved cases and thinks his dad did them. So, Gary, you need help.
So, are you saying that he saved the evidence bit, or lack thereof, till the very end?
Basically, wow. Yeah. Like, you were waiting the whole time. It's like, okay, maybe, well, something's gonna show up eventually. But first, we have to get the build-up on, but it just doesn't happen.
Smart of him.
Smart of him, yeah.
Not a good way for people to appreciate your books.
No, and I won't believe anything else if he writes a nonfiction, because, like, this one is just, I mean, it shouldn't be, I mean, it is in the true crime section, but it is a total memoir of my identity. Where do I belong in this world? Yeah. Where's my dad? Where's my mom? I'm seeming so cold in this episode.
No, that's okay.
If you don't like books, here's a movie you can watch, basically on the same topic, maybe better, given that these are the worst 5 serial killer books. These are not, by the way, like, make clear, this is not the 5 worst documentaries on the topic, because that's not really what it's about. These are actually good documentaries. So, from the 5th one, from The Wanted Killer, the documentary you can look up on YouTube. All these are on YouTube, so they're all free. Is the Harvey Kurgan, Harb the Hammer, serial killer documentary, and the uploader is Leonard Taylor. The next documentary is about Richard Ramirez, which was the Night Stalker. The documentary is called Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker - Serial Killer Documentary, and the uploader was Serial Killer Documentaries, so you might want to check out that channel as well. Next one, the BTK Killer. The documentary is called Dennis Rader, the BTK Killer, Serial Killer Documentary, uploaded by The Junk Buckets. It's an interesting name. The next one for Albert Fish was called Cannibal, Albert Fish Documentary, and the uploader is 9Crime6. And then last one is for The Zodiac Killer, which is called The Horrifying Murders of the Zodiac Killer. This one's a bit shorter, it's 20 minutes, but it's pretty good, so I think anyone would really enjoy it, and the uploader is BuzzFeed Multiplayer. So if you don't like books, you can just watch them online for free.
I think that's what I'm going to be doing.
Yeah.
I sure haven't read any of those books.
Any of those books, and I can watch them.
Yeah.
And there are lots of clips you can find about them as well, so. And be sure to check out the Murderpedia, that's kind of where I get all my information. It's pretty much any killer, it'll say the total body counts or whatever, and when they got arrested, if they got arrested, how did they die, all that kind of good stuff.
Juicy
information.
Really?
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.